Okay, Mr. Carlston?
May it please the court, my name is Chris Carlston. I represent the petitioner Antonio Campuzano. The Board of Immigration Appeals erred in two, committed two errors in this case. The first error was allowing petitioner's admission of guilt made after the initial erroneous removability finding to be used to establish the Department of Homeland Security satisfied its burden to prove by clear and convincing evidence petitioner is removable, even though the BIA conceded the criminal conviction documents were not properly authenticated in accordance with the statute. The second error was finding that Texas Penal Code 21.11A1 is a categorical match to the generic definition of a crime of child abuse, even though the minimum conduct punished under the Texas statute is overbroad from the generic definition of child abuse. Removal hearings in immigration court are divided into two parts. In the first part, the burden is on the Department of Homeland Security to establish by clear and convincing evidence a lawful permanent resident is removable from the United States. If DHS fails to prove by clear and convincing evidence that a lawful permanent resident is removable, then removal proceedings are terminated. If DHS does prove that a lawful permanent resident is removable from the United States, then removal proceedings continue to the next stage, where a lawful permanent resident submits an application for relief against removal. In order for the Department of Homeland Security to meet its burden, Congress set forth a list of documents that DHS may provide to the Immigration Court to prove removability. Congress stated these documents shall be evidenced by an official publication thereof or by a copy attested by the official having legal custody or the record by an authorized deputy. Now, for criminal conviction documents that are obtained through electronic means by the Department of Homeland Security, Congress added additional requirements to authenticate those documents. Congress required that the Department of Homeland Security submit certification from the DHS officer who obtained the documents, certifying that these are court records, and also submit a certification from an officer of the state repository or the court clerk in charge of the documents, certifying that the documents are correct. In petitioner's case, DHS failed to do either of those. The BIA.
Let me ask a question. If we grant relief today, are they free tomorrow to have another hearing?
Yes, Your Honor. If the court agrees that the Department of Homeland Security did not submit the applications or the conviction documents in accordance with the statute, and that the BIA committed an error in allowing those documents to be admitted, then a new hearing would be conducted for response.
And are you saying that they would not be able to prove up the judgment?
If the Department of Homeland Security was able to submit documents that complied with the statute, then they would be able to prove it.
Are you saying they cannot?
I am saying that in this moment, they did not. So I'm not saying, no, Your Honor, to answer
but
your
I'm
question
just
directly.
They could have a hearing Monday and...
I'm saying Monday they can submit documents certified by the DHS officer who obtained the documents, and they can provide documents by the state repository or officer that's in charge of the state court clerk, confirming that those documents are in fact what they attest to be. So yes, Your Honor, I'm not saying that the government cannot provide these documents. They can in the future, but they didn't in this case, and that prejudiced respondent. So there's due process issues that petitioner was prejudiced in this case because those documents were not properly authenticated.
Do I understand correctly that at least two circuits have said that the provision of that statute is not mandatory?
Correct, Your Honor. The Ninth Circuit has said that the provision of that statute is not mandatory, that it can be, the documents can be authenticated in other ways. In petitioner's case, the BIA presented a novel argument that DHS never did actually present a form of authentication during the first stage of removal proceedings.
Yeah, okay, and you're giving a fair answer to my question. I was specifically trying to focus on what the fact the Eighth and the Ninth Circuits have decided, contrary to your argument that it's mandatory. Have any circuits agreed with you that it's mandatory?
No, Your Honor. No.
The reason I'm asking, I don't mean to keep interrupting you. You're making a good argument. I just want to understand, because if we were to agree with you on that point, we would be creating a circuit split. Is that fair to say?
That's fair to say, but also with this case, it's novel in the sense that the circuits pointed, the other circuits pointed to authentication methods that were presented during the first stage of removal proceedings. In this case, the Board of Immigration Appeals only pointed to authentication methods that were occurred after the first stage of removal proceedings. So what the BIA said is that the authentication occurred during the second stage after removability was determined. So what the BIA is saying is that petitioner's statements made during the relief stage and his application for relief that was submitted after the finding of removability was issued, retroactively go back to help the Department of Homeland Security satisfy its burden to prove that petitioner is removable. There's not a statute that supports you, that reading of the BIA's decision. The BIA pointed to Matter of Velasquez, but Matter of Velasquez also does not specifically deal with this issue. Matter of Velasquez only deals with admissions to guilt, which occur during the first part of removal proceedings, where the burden is on the Department of Homeland Security to prove by clear and convincing evidence that the lawful permanent resident is removable. The BIA's current reading in petitioner's case, it is so broad that it renders the statute 8 U.S.C. 1229A3A meaningless, the statute that puts the burden on the Department of Homeland Security, meaningless, because if this court agreed with the Board of Immigration Appeals, then the Department of Homeland Security would not have to authenticate documents in any way. They would just submit documents and or criminal conviction records, and then they would wait for proceedings to continue to the second part, where they would just wait for the lawful permanent resident to admit guilt. And so the BIA's reading or decision seems to thwart the plain meaning of the statute. Respondent proposes that the documents were authenticated because they're public record. However, that argument is not exhaustive. That was not presented to the Immigration Court, and it was not presented to the Board of Immigration Appeals. And it's also not a method of authentication that was listed in the statute. Moving to the second part, the BIA erred in determining that 21.11a categorically matches with a crime of child abuse. Now, there's not a lot of cases on point, and I refer to Matter of Silva Trevino, which is a case dealing with crimes involving moral turpitude and not crimes involving child abuse. The reason I did that was to point out that the BIA itself found that the minimum conduct involved in Texas Penal Code 21.11a is touching. Now, the BIA cited to Sullivan v. State. In Sullivan v. State, the Texas court determined that the minimum conduct was touching the chest of a boy. This wouldn't be part of the sexual organs or breast or genitalia that the BIA says would be sexual conduct. So the Texas statute and the Texas courts punish conduct that is outside the categorical or the generic definition of crime of child abuse. If there are no further questions, I'll yield my time.
Yes, you've saved time for rebuttal. Thank you. Mr. Remnitz?
Please support your honors and amendments on behalf of the United States Attorney General. This one brings two issues before the court, one about class.
You're going to need to just speak more slowly. We're having audio problems in the courtroom this week. It's not your fault, but you need to speak slowly and more loudly, please.
Understood. May please support your honors and amendments on behalf of the United States Attorney General. This one brings two issues before the court, authentication and whether or not this conviction constitutes a crime of child abuse. Turning to the first issue, authentication, there's no reason for this court to revert from decisions of the Ninth Circuit and Eighth Circuit, apart from those decisions, and accept the respondent or petitioner's authentication argument. First, as the government pointed out in this case, Sam Nomi expects upon remand, because these documents are publicly available. It's not a matter of exhaustion, it's a matter of futility. He doesn't challenge that these documents, which are publicly available on the Dallas County website, meet the statute and are authentic. He cannot. They are from his court of conviction. So I don't know what he hopes to gain upon remand in this case. The second one, there's no reason to depart from the Ninth Circuit and Eighth Circuit because the petitioner is simply wrong. As the board adopted the Ninth Circuit's reason, this statute is a maximum standard. So it shall be admitted, meets these authentication standards, but doesn't say an exhaustive list of how to authenticate. Doesn't say this is the only way to authenticate. As the agency implemented the regulation for the statute, subsection D states that it's not an exhaustive list, that you can use any manner that shows documents reliably what it reports to mean. I don't hear petitioner making an ultra-virus argument that regulation is impermissible. So under the regulation, DHS had its burden to authenticate this document. They submitted this criminal records. Petitioner said, I wasn't convicted of that crime, but then without understanding his merits hearing, he admitted he was. He said, I was convicted of this crime. I was convicted as charged in the indictment. DHS met its burden of authenticity in this case, and not only that, petitioner himself submitted a cancellation removal application where he also said, I was convicted of this crime. There's no two stages of proceedings, as petitioner states. Things are ongoing about removability and relief up until the immigration judge's final decision. So in this case, DHS clearly met its burden of showing these documents were authentic. The second issue in this case is whether or not this crime constitutes a movable offense, specifically a crime of child abuse. As the government noted, Garcia Ybarra completely encompasses this statute of conviction. There's no difference. The statute in Garcia Ybarra was Texas sexual assault. This statute is indecency with a child sexual conduct. The only difference is statute Garcia involves sexual penetration. This statute is sexual contact with a child.
He cited a court of criminal appeals case, and I'm not sure that was in his briefing. Do you?
It was not. He doesn't address Garcia anymore. Yeah, but that case is what proposes all his arguments because there's no difference there. I'll also note, just like Garcia v. Barr, the family law code in Texas also classifies this offense as a crime of child abuse. There's just nothing he can do to get around Garcia v. Barr. The only possible argument would be a local who's right challenge doesn't make that either. But out of an abundance of caution, respondent addressed that argument, and it's in the 20HA where the court essentially said we still agree that's the best reading of the statute, the board's reading of the statute, even after the right. Unless the panel has any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Remnitz. Mr. Carlston for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. To address the Garcia v. Barr argument, Garcia v. Barr addresses a different provision of the Texas Penal Code, provision where the minimum conduct is not touching the chest of a boy. The minimum conduct in the Garcia v. Barr case is that the conduct occurs between one's mouth or one's genitals with another. So this case is different than Garcia v. Barr. And Garcia v. Barr does not control the reading of 21.11a1. Your Honor, we respectfully request that the court terminate proceedings, primarily because the Department of Homeland Security fails to provide documents authenticated, proving petitioner's removable, and also because respondent did not commit a criminal, did not commit a crime involving child abuse. Thank you.
All right, thank you, Mr. Carlson. Your case and both of today's cases are under submission, and the court is in recess under the usual order.